The sun was at its zenith when they left the steward on the little ledge where they had last seen Deaton. Ripka stood behind Tibble, her gaze fixed on the stain throbbing with flies at her feet. Deaton had been injured, and not lightly. They had no way of knowing how bad off he was.
He'll be all right.
It's not Deaton I'm worried about, lass, though I appreciate your thought.
Then what are you worried about?
This whole sand-cursed city! You've seen what he can do when he's angry. You saw that flash on the cliffside. Make no mistake, he's gotten it under control some since we first met. But there's a reason he went to the cellless middle of the Scorched when he got away from Valathia the first time. And a real good reason why he doesn't stay long in cell cities. Why he doesn't dare go home. They've got 5 fire mounts in Hornsteading. You know what he could do with that.
You're saying he could blow this whole mine?
Yes, he could blow this whole city if he's good and roiled. Come on back up now.
Tibble turned back to the flyer.
We've got to pay a visit to the salvagemen before that pit-cursed woman comes to pay us a visit.
Ripka stoutly avoided thinking on what in the blue skies Tibble would want with the minders of the city's garbage heap, but not as actively as she avoided thinking of the whole of Aransa torn to bits by the anger of one man. Deaton's fingers had gone numb, and Aella was deaf to his whining. Seemed she was deaf to most things now that she'd said what it was she wanted to. Without the natural progression of the stars to guide them, he had no way of telling how long he'd been chained up, but his stomach was pretty sure it had been too long. It was all beginning to weigh on him, the pain in his leg, the ache in his arms and back. He shifted, struggling to find a position that didn't smart something fierce.
Will you stop worming around like an infant?
Well, I don't believe it. Thought you'd been struck mute from above.
Are you so desperate for attention that you cannot go a moment without conversation?
You'd be wanting to have a chat too if you were strung up like this.
The others seem to be faring just fine.
Well, it's not my worry that their spirits are broken. How long have they been on this ship anyway?
It varies. We began this expedition 2 moons ago.
2 moons?
It took us a quarter of one to get here. Anyway, I don't see why you're so worried about their comfort.
Ever heard of basic human compassion?
Aella glanced down at her book, flipped through a few pages, and shrugged.
Sorry, not in here.
What's that then? A guidebook on how to be an ice princess?
I would kill for some ice right now.
You know what? I believe it.
Kalia came floating up the deck, a black-robed attendant at her side. Deaton clenched his jaw. He recognized the shape of the case in the man's hands. Doctor's tools. Experimental ones. Kalia stood back, keeping to the shadow cast by a buoyancy sack, and waved the attendant forward.
Nothing to say, Hunding?
Nothing polite.
The attendant handed the case to Kalia, opened it, and produced 2 pairs of iron shackles. As the big man unlocked the chains about Deaton's ankles and opened the maw of one shackle wide, he caught Aella's eye. She was nose down in her book, the pages angled to hide her face from Kalia's view, but her gaze was fixed on him. He raised a brow. She gave a slight shake of her head. When his wrists were shackled, the attendant jerked him to his feet. He swayed. But that got him a quick clip on the back of the head from her attendant.
Come along, then.
She waved toward the cabin quarters midship. He stood, frozen, willing himself to shrink into obscurity. The attendant gave him a shove from behind with the rounded head of a cudgel. Deaton started limping forward, rubbing his arms and hands to get the life back. If he were going to be experimented upon, the least he could do was give these bastards a headache.
You will stop that.
Kalia opened the door into the cabin. It was a finely crafted door, warm-hued wood rubbed with beeswax and carved all around with dancing air serpents. Looked like something his own auntie would have had commissioned. It would have looked friendly to him, once. Now he hesitated, dreading to cross the threshold into the oil-lit space beyond.
I don't know what you mean. And anyway, I'd rather stay out here and take in the view. It is lovely, don't you think?
Kalia's gaze flicked to her attendants. The attendant grabbed Deaton by the short chain between his wrists and hauled him through the doorway. After being dragged down a dark hallway, Deaton felt an unforgiving slab of a hardwood table beneath him, firm and cold. He squirmed, trying to orient himself, and got a flash of directed lantern light in his eyes for his trouble. Deaton squeezed his eyes shut and prayed to the blue skies for the blessed fumes of golden needle tea to drag him under soon.
"Aren't you going to knock me out?"
The attendant wrenched his arms above his head and strapped them down. His legs were already secured. He hadn't even noticed.
"Not this time. I will need you conscious to record accurate results."
A thick leather strap was hauled over his chest, buckled down so tight it compressed his ability to breathe.
"You are embarrassing yourself. Settle, and I will loosen the strap."
The strap eased up a notch.
"Golden needle, please."
"I said no. You see, though I have never had the pleasure to work on you personally, Lord Honding, I have read my colleague's extensive notes on the matter."
"Oh, good, you can read."
"Be quiet. As I was saying, before your rather uncouth escape from the Bone Tower, my colleagues were having a difficult time regulating the intensity of your particular skill."
Bone Tower. He'd never even known that pit-cursed place had a name. Kalia appeared at his side, a long syringe filled with a murky pink-red solution in one hand. The mixture swirled as she gestured. The pale red shot through with opalescent wisps. Lightning mixed with smoke. It was a fine syringe by his estimation. Rare, high-quality work. The thought didn't soothe his nerves any. Deaton pressed his lips together to keep his retorts to himself and glanced around the room, trying to find something, anything he could use. There was too much light in his eyes to make out any of his surroundings. Lamps had been shuttered and directed at him, presumably so Kalia could see what she was doing. He doubted she was unaware of the isolating effect on him. She didn't seem like the type of woman to be unaware of anything at all.
"My research, however, has led me in a different direction. This is my own special mix. Psyllium blended with the blood of some of our strongest diviners, along with some extra little goodies to keep your body from rejecting it. The theory is quite simple. I put forth that combining the diviner's art of locating even the tiniest pockets of psyllium, no matter how long dormant the fire mount, is an essential skill for the refinement of any deviant talent. With the ability for finesse in place, the deviants will grow."
"You want me to become stronger? Did you trip and stick yourself with that thing? Get a little cell on the brain?"
No. I want you to become more refined. There is a difference. Please do try to pay attention. The treatments, it seems, have the added benefit of increasing the deviant's desire to be near psyllium to comfort the mind, which is why we will begin now. Our path back to Valathia will take us through cell-dry settlements only. Understand?"
"Uh-huh."
"Good. Go and fetch Aella."
Kalia turned back to her preparations. Deaton tipped his head this way and that, struggling to see anything in the room that wasn't light. He failed, so he fell back to his next best tool.
"Afraid to give it a try without the kid around to keep you covered, eh?"
"Hardly. She is an added safety precaution. I can assure you that I can handle anything you attempt myself."
"You're telling me you're a deviant too? You're doing this to your own people?"
"We all have our talents, Honding. And despite what you believe, I am trying to help these creatures."
"Help? This is..."
"Aella, sit there. The subject may react strongly at first. Be prepared to increase dampening."
"Yes, mistress."
Kalia nodded and plunged the needle into his arm. Liquid fire filled his veins, searing him from the inside out. His eyes flew wide, wider than they'd ever been in his life, taking in every last detail of the room beyond his prison of light. Bits of psyllium hung in the air, particles so fine he hadn't noticed them before. They glowed before him like motes of dust in a sunbeam. He could sense it everywhere, an impenetrable, constant cloud. There was psyllium below the table, too, the table that was trapping him. Finesse. He turned his anger in upon himself.
"Shit! Shut him down!
Deaton crashed to the floor, heaped amongst the rubble of his makeshift gurney. His moment of clarity was lost, the minuscule flecks of cell once more beyond his senses. The back of his shirt was burned clear off. He could feel scraps of it sticking in the mess of his flesh. Something encroached over his senses, fell like a curtain. Heavy hands closed on his shoulders, and a smaller one grasped his chin, tipped his head back. For a single heartbeat, he stared into Aella's eyes, a sliver of worry hinted at by fine wrinkles in her forehead. Then Kalia laid a cloth over his mouth, and he breathed deep the aroma of golden needle. Cold water shocked him out of his drugged stupor. Deaton jerked upright, the chains around his wrists and ankles snapping him back down. He blinked, struggling to clear water from his eyes. He found himself chained face down on a rough woven cot, too scared to move lest he disturb the early crusting over of the scabs on his back. Whatever had been left of his shirt was cut away. He turned his head and peered through the distortion of water caught in his lashes. Figures swam into view before him. The attendant retreated from his side, an empty bucket in his hands. Kalia strode forward with Thratia in her wake. The refined calm of the ex-commodore's face was lost under a storm cloud of anger. Deaton forced the biggest, stupidest smile he could muster onto his face. They were still in Aransa.
Hello, Commodore. Coming with us to Valathia?
Hardly. Is this yours, Hunding?
Thratia stepped aside so that he could see the man who stood behind her.
Nujam!
Good evening, Lord Hunding.
What are you doing on this broken crate?
I've come to retrieve you.
I don't think these people push over for politeness, Nujam.
Thratia prodded Nujam in the side with the pommel of her blade, and Deaton realized that he'd never even seen her draw it.
Your man here is proposing a trade.
A trade? What for? A day pass to the salt baths?
For my ship.
Thratia stepped forward and knelt before Deaton. She lifted her blade and laid it, light as a feather, just against the underside of his chin. She tilted his head up, peering into his eyes.
So, it occurred to me that you do know where my ship is.
As a matter of truth, I don't. In fact, it seems you and I are the only ones who don't know where the damn thing is hiding.
And what's that supposed to mean?
It occurred to me that Tibble, the Doppel, and quite probably Ripka all know where it is. What about you, Kalia? You've got a manger full of sensitives here. Can't you find a little old ship? Or are you holding out on your bosom companion?
Thratia stood and turned to the Imperial, nothing at all friendly in her expression, which pleased Deaton something fierce. Driving a wedge between those two was almost worth the scorched back. Almost.
Can any of these husks sense my ship?
We've tried, of course. We are still here because we suspect the Doppel may have to move the vessel soon, and in doing so, we will note its presence. But for the time being, no. We do not know where it is.
With Thratia's back turned and Kalia's attention on her, Deaton stole a glance at Aella. The cursed girl winked. He had no idea what to make of it.
Very well.
Thratia turned back to Deaton, waving her blade absently at Nujam.
What's to stop me cutting it out of your steward, then?
Foreseeing your conclusions, I've arranged for the ship to be destroyed if Deaton and I are not both well and free when we arrive at the location.
Really now? And just what other arrangements have you made?
Our terms are quite simple. The Commodore, Dignitary Kalia, Deaton, myself, and a single escort of your choice are to go to the location of the ship. Whereupon, if Deaton and I are released unharmed, we will turn the vessel over to you and then leave Aransa in your capable hands.
Thratia replaced her sword and crossed her arms.
And how will we get there?
I would assume on one of this vessel's fine emergency flyers.
Fine. Pick someone useful to take with us, Kalia.
Aella, go prepare yourself. And a flyer.
The girl stood and bowed.
Yes, mistress.
You sure you want that girl with us?
Oh, yes.
Hey, can't take me there like this, can you?
They'd taken the chains off, but Deaton was not yet a free man. He stood on the deck of Kalia's flyer, a little dinghy used to shuttle a handful of people to and from the big ship when proper mooring was elusive. Wasn't nearly as big as his own flyer, which he took a gleam of pride in. Thratia kept tight to his right hand, her own hand never straying far from the grip of her cutlass. Ayella piloted the flyer, but not through any cell manipulation. She kept him cut off, and he assumed that meant she was cut off too. She piloted it in the usual way, with fan and rudder and sail, her young face stern with concentration. Not for the first time, he wondered just what exactly all these deviant sensitives were being trained for. Whatever it was, he wanted no part of it. New Chum was kept from him, clustered up toward the front of the dinghy where he could give directions to Ayella. Which was a real frustration, because Deaton would much rather be trading glances with that rascal than Thratia. Under New Chum's guidance, it wasn't long until it became clear to all aboard they were heading straight for the smokestack. Deaton grinned.
My men have been all over the hob and the baths. You're telling me she hid the damn thing there anyway? How?
My apologies, Warden, but there are other places on the fire line besides the baths and hub.
Damn clever for a doppel.
Damn clever in general. She's not a creature, Kalia, unlike your lustrous self.
Ayella brought the dinghy up at a sharp angle and crested the conical ring of the smokestack's mouth. The flat bed of the firemount's plug was dusted over with fine ash, a few black rocks poking their thumbs up here and there. The great pipe mouths that fed into the lines draped over the sides of the cone, boring deep into the gray plug. Most had been burned to a crisp, leaving little more than smoldering heaps of rubble to block the bore mouths. But one or two were still operational. That was one job sensitives were too valued to be assigned. Diviners would find the pocket, sure, but it would be plain old laborers who cut through the crust with pickaxes and diamond-edged shovels, hoping they'd find the pocket before they found the magma. Hoping that when they did find the pocket, it didn't blow itself out and fling them all from the top of the fire mount. Mine masters didn't mind a blowout. It made it easier to anchor the mouth of the pipeline. And anyway, psyllium pockets never ran dry so long as the fire mount had any kick to it. Deaton allowed himself a conciliatory smile. It looked like they had experienced some trouble getting the line set up. While the pipelines were draped over the conical ridge at regular intervals, there was one glaringly bald spot. He could only hope that no one had died to find out that pocket wouldn't give. The craft rocked as Ayella brought it down. Apparently the fire mount had its own ideas about air currents.
Move, Hunding.
Thratia grabbed the back of his neck in one fist and shoved him forward, down the little gangplank Ayella had extended for their egress. Deaton looked at the girl, but she was busy making sure the burr anchors bit snugly into the ground. He wondered if Kalia ever did any of her own flying work. He glanced back at the Imperial with her singed and bloodied white coat, her nails lacquered the same blue as the sky, and decided that was very, very unlikely. New Chum positioned himself at the spearhead of the group and motioned further down the wall toward the bald patch of ground where there was no pipeline.
This way, if you please.
Their morbid little party set out, traipsing across the belly of the fire mount. As he stole glances around the broken land, Deaton noticed one distinct thing missing from the cracked landscape, the larkspur. There were heaps of magma rock and dunes of ash, glittering blades of shattered obsidian, whirls of breath-stealing heat, but no ship. Except, to their right, a little disturbance in the soot. A small smudge of irregularity that he recognized as the footprint of his own bedraggled flyer. But the happy birthday Vera was nowhere to be found. Thratia signaled to stop their progress and shoved Deaton forward.
To the pits with this.
Kalia gave her a tight nod.
Tibble, if you want this sorry sack of flesh back, you show yourself.
Deaton stumbled, exaggerating his overbalance to get as far away from Thratia as possible, and ran smack into Tibbs as he stepped out from around a pillar of black stone. Deaton froze, chest to chest with the man who might be his only friend in the world. That rangy son of a bitch put one hand on Deaton's shoulder and shoved him back toward his captors. Deaton staggered, this time doing his best to keep his balance in check, absolutely straining his core muscles to stay upright. He glared as hard as he could at Tibbs, knowing full well the freak show behind him couldn't see.
Evening, Warden.
Tibbs tipped down the brim of his singed hat.
Nice of you to come see me.
Cut the shit!
Thratia's cutlass whipped over Deaton's shoulder and pressed right up tight against Tibble's throat.
Where's my ship?
More to the point.
Kalia stepped forward to stand on Deaton's other side.
Where is my Doppel? I know you could not possibly pilot the craft yourself, Tibble. Not even with your watch captain's aid.
Easy now.
Tibbs placed a finger on the flat of Thratia's blade and nudged it out to the side, then took a step back, putting more distance between himself and Deaton. The prick.
Ship's coming round, though you'll have to check with Pelkaya regarding where she intends on going. Doesn't have much love for your kind, understand?
Tibbs pointed behind them, and the ladies on the field turned as one to regard the tip of an all-too-familiar mast creeping over the lip of the conical wall. Deaton, however, kept his eyes squarely on Tibbs's sour face and tried to mouth out, N-O-S-E-L. Tibbs blinked at him, big brows drawing together. I-C-A-N-T, B-O-O-M. The idiot just shrugged. Deaton clenched his fists and shuffled a step toward Tibbs. The Larkspur crested the rise, big enough to cast a shadow over their little party. A surprisingly small shadow.
That's not the Larkspur.
Deaton spun around and let himself take a step back towards Tibbs as he did it. Hovering above the Firemount's rim was the Larkspur as he'd known it, sails full and stabilizing wings spread wide in the afternoon light. Pelkaya stood on the deck alongside Ripka, both waving with big, stupid grins. The exact same wave, the exact same grin. He half-turned and saw Aella's small face pinched with focus, sweat sluicing off her scrunched brow. Her fists were clenched at her sides, making her look even smaller for how tiny they were. Her jaw jutted forward with strain. The Larkspur vanished. So did Pelkaya. Aella staggered, all the color draining from her small cheeks. Deaton reached for her, but she swatted him back, forcing herself upright. Too damned proud to seek out help when she needed it. She caught his eye and jerked her chin. He blinked and turned back toward the place where the Larkspur had been. Selium rushed toward the blue vault of the sky, a reverse opalescent rain. Glimmering droplets raced away from their armature, his own sad little flyer with a rather shocked Ripka standing alone on deck. The stitched-together contraption still had Happy Birthday, Vera, painted in purple along the side of one buoyancy sack. Deaton thought he'd faint. No time for that. Aella had dropped her hold. Deaton let the cell rise higher and higher, straining himself until he feared it would escape his grasp. Once it had melded with the streaky white of wind-battered clouds, he reached out for all he was worth and held. Binding, smashing it all together until it was one massive globule. He swayed, sick with the immensity of it, felt a familiar hand grip his arm and prop him upright. Tibbs, that old bastard, grinning like an idiot. Probably because he was one. There was no way he could have seen Aella coming. Thratia spun on Deaton and Tibble, cutlass lashing out.
Who the fuck is Vera? And where is my pit's damn ship?
Deaton was straining himself too hard to pay any real attention, but he thought he heard Kalia drawing her own blade. Looked like the Imperial was up to doing her own work after all.
Over there.
Tibbs stepped out of reach of Thratia's blade, this time dragging Deaton along with him. Thank the sweet skies, at least Tibbs hadn't gone completely mad. Kalia strode toward Aella, grabbed the girl by the front of her blouse and hauled her upright.
Take down all illusions in this area. Now.
Kalia let the girl go, shoving her forward. Aella turned in a slow circle, eyes narrowed.
Oh, I told you!
Thratia lunged and cracked the pommel of her cutlass against his temple hard enough to split skin and send the poor devil reeling. Deaton forced himself forward, grabbed his friend by the shirt and held him up, tried to drag him back a step, but was halted by Thratia placing the edge of her blade against his own scrawny neck.
Everyone's staying right here until I get my ship, understand?
Psst!
After drawing Thratia and Kalia's attention, Aella pointed straight behind their little group, eyes wide with wonder.
It wasn't there before.
She held both hands out, so tired she needed the assistance of mirror movement to make her powers work. The empty air just a few paces behind them rippled, shimmered, then fell away in tatters, ribbons of cell peeling off. Testament to the girl's exhaustion, she was only able to rip it at the seams, not shatter it whole. Deaton let that cell go. There was no way he could hold so much. When the illusion had passed, There, the Larkspur hovered. Half its sails were tucked in, its stabilizing wings only half out. Pilkaya stood on the edge of the deck facing them. The rail had been taken down, and she had one booted foot on a roll of canvas as thick around as a corpse. She grinned down at their little gathering and cut Thratia a tight salute. The ex-commodore strode forward, Kalia falling in line at her side. But it was Aella that Pilkaya turned her attention to. The Doppel inclined her head, a small smile of genuine respect on her time-worn features. Deaton blinked, realizing he was seeing Pelkaya's true face for the first time. He squinted, straining, but was too far away to make out any detail.
You're good, girl, but you missed one!
Aella spun around, overbalanced and staggered sideways a step. She brought her hands up to cup either side of her head, pressing in as if she could stop the world spinning with the force of her hands.
Enough of this!
Kalia outstretched a hand, cilium-filled bangles jarring together. The Larkspur shuddered, Pelkaya's smile fading as she fought her own battle against Kalia's perverse talents. Thratia approached the hull of her ship, Kalia on her heels, and reached for the ladder. Pilkaya kicked the bundle. The canvas unfurled, dumping a motley collection of half-rotted vines atop the heads of both women. They started swatting at the tangled vegetable mass, molded flowers mashing into their hair. Kalia's coat was smeared with rot. Deaton could have sung at the sight.
Stop fucking around!
Thratia's cutlass made short work of her entanglement, but she was still smeared in the rich nectar of the sticky blooms. Deaton recognized the flowers then, the ones Tibble had pointed out to him at the fete. Shit.
Told you! You missed one!
The Doppel waved her hand, and the missing pipeline popped into existence. No trouble digging there, after all. Only this one was defunct, its leather tube infested with cilium-fed bees. Bees that, according to Tibble, were rather fond of thistle blossom. The swarm rose, a cloud blacker than any he'd ever seen. They coalesced and turned, irritated by the absence of the cell that had been hiding them. The cell that they had no doubt been happily snacking upon until the moment of its dissolution. Thratia leapt for the Larkspur's ladder, but Pilkaya made the Larkspur dance out of her reach. Out of all their reach, flitting further away from the mouth of the smokestack than anyone could leap.
Fuck this!
Thratia threw her blade down and sprinted toward Kalia's dinghy.
And just what the fuck are we supposed to do, Tibbs?
Tibbs grinned and pointed at the happy birthday Vura, looping around the mass and headed right for them, Ripka at the helm. Problem was, Ripka had never flown a damn thing before in her life.
She's all over the blasted sky!
I showed her how it's done. She's there.
The swarm slammed into them. Fist-sized bees, bodies gorged with cell, broke over them like a wave. Dozens of the things dropped dead around Kalia as she extended her perversion of cilium to the gas already in the bees' bellies. Deaton spun around, swatting wildly, feeling bloated and fragile bodies burst under each swipe. There were too many to swat. Bright, hot kisses of pain blossomed on Deaton's arms, his cheeks. Creatures angry that he wasn't food took their rage out on his tender flesh.
Tibbs, calm down!
Tibbs yanked him down beside the rock he'd been hiding behind. He had a cloak stowed there and dragged it over both of them. It was thick and coarse woven, enough to keep the stings at bay as long as they didn't let any gaps show. Hard to do when you had two men crowded under one blanket.
You stupid son
of a... Have you just gotten your ass over to this side of the rock when I'd signaled?
Signaled? What signal? Oh, shit. New chum, was it?
Had his own cloak on his back. Saw him drop down and stop crawling to the rendezvous site as soon as Pelkaya made her appearance. Pits below! Can't you pay any attention?
Rendezvous? Ripka was headed straight for us.
Well, I can't say why she decided...
Bees dropped from the sky, plunked into view in the tiny little sliver between the cloak and the ground. Fat bodies twitched and collapsed in on themselves with rot.
Hunding, will you stop cowering?
Deaton peeled back an edge of the cloak and glanced up. Kalia stood above them, arms outstretched, the eye of a storm of dying insects.
Ugh.
His stomach lurched, reacting to her perversion of the cilium all around. It was almost enough to make him lose his concentration on the cloud he held above. Almost. Her face was half purple, a red welt smack dab in the center of one cheek, her outstretched arms pocked with identical marks. Despite the pain she must be feeling, she smiled. He hated her for that.
Get up, idiot.
I rather like it down here.
You will leave with me, now. If Thratia lives, then she can take back her ship on her own time. I'm done with this place.
Well, that's a real nice invitation, but I'm afraid I have plans that I just can't back out of. It would be ungentlemanly of me.
Get up.
Deaton looked at Tibbs, but he just shrugged.
So this is it then, my rescue. Well, it's been a damn good try.
Joints aching, flesh burning. He pushed himself to his feet and let the cloak drop around him. Tibbs stood beside him, arms crossed over his scrawny chest.
I'm coming too.
Fine.
From the corner of Deaton's eye, a familiar shape darkened the sky, careening, bobbing, determined.
Stole, you mad hunting bastard.
Nothing more to say, hunting?
Deaton shoved a hand in his pocket in an effort to affect an unconcerned slouch, and his fingers brushed paper. The paper he'd nicked from Thratia. He pulled it free, a neat little square, and flicked it open. The familiarity of the handwriting punched him in the gut. Apothecs were always careless in forming their letters. Belle Grandin was no exception.
Oh.
Now is not the time for love notes.
Deaton looked up from the familiar scrawl and studied the white coat. Strain fractured the lines around her eyes. Sallowness had crept into her cheeks. Whatever effort she was expending holding the swarm back was doing her no good.
Do you know what this is?
Deaton turned the paper around to face Kalia and saw her eyes narrow with suspicious recognition.
It's a Mercer cipher, not a particularly opaque one. It seems the owner wasn't too concerned about it falling into the wrong hands. Maybe she hoped it would.
He flung the paper at her and let it tumble to the ground, wilting in the soot between them. He then took a half step forward, pointing at the discarded note.
I have been an idiot. An absolute bumbling fool.
You'll have no argument from me.
Be quiet.
Kalia flinched, and her momentary lapse of control made him smirk.
That little scrap is a list of deliveries. All this time, all this sand-cursed fucking time, I let my fear hang on you. You and your puppet masters. Stupid, stupid man that I am. Thratia trading deviant cell sensitives for Velathian weapons. Cruel. Typical of her. Believable. But do you know what else is typical?
I grow weary of this.
Kalia gestured toward him, a casual turning of the wrist, and he felt the sense of decay within him intensify.
Oh.
He staggered sideways, clutched his side, sweat forming rivers all across his skin. Tibbs gripped his arm, held him upright. Clinging to what control he had left, Deaton reached out, shunted aside his sense of the cloud above, and grabbed for the bee nearest Kalia. The bee burst apart, roiling with flame.
Shit!
Not close enough to do more than singe the woman, but enough to make her leap to the side. Her grip on him was extinguished as she dealt with the shock and pain. He extended himself until his muscles quivered, taking the cloud in mind once more. All around him, he felt the cell in the bellies of the bees more keenly, but they were a tight-packed mass. To try and blow just one again would mean losing control and blowing them all. Newchum was out there, Ripka and Aella. He couldn't risk it. Now he had an idea, an option.
You will listen.
Kalia glared at him but said nothing.
Why was she disposed of, Kalia? Why was Commodore fucking Throatslitter kicked out of the Velathian fleet? It wasn't for cutting throats, we both know that.
She wouldn't relinquish power after the conquest of the Saldive Isles.
Wouldn't relinquish power? And you've been giving her weapons. Weapons! I'd wondered why Thratia cared so much about cutting Galtro down where he stood. She's a psychopath, power-hungry, cold-hearted, pressed for time by you, but she's not stupid. Never that. She risked a lot killing the Mine Master. Could have just won the seat fair as scales, but no. He needed to go then. The Doppel was just a convenient scapegoat. He was going to fix the mines, get Aronsa's Zellium production back up to 100%. It was his job to keep them running, and by the pits, he was good at it. But without that cell, honey, the Grandins couldn't make their liquor. And without that conveniently unique good to export, how was your little friend Thratia going to hide her distribution network?
She wouldn't.
You have no idea what she's capable of. How many arms do you think she needed to take her answer?
placid, scared Aransa. Too frightened by the specter of the Doppel to do any harm. Too happy to have her by half. They would have voted her in. She didn't need all of that. Not here. Pick the paper up.
Never taking her gaze from Deaton, Kalia crouched, took the slip of paper in one hand, and stood. She did not read it so much as flick her eyes to it in brief increments, absorbing the information in bits while refusing to release her awareness of her surroundings. He'd expected as much. As he watched, her face grew drawn, her jaw tense, and her lips pressed bloodless. He knew what she was seeing, had read it himself. A list of coordinates, deliveries made and planned, all over the Scorched. All of the Grandin's honey liqueur. The liqueur and their false-bottomed crates. He watched understanding settle within her. Smooth the tautness of her shoulders. Darken the glare of her eye. Kalia folded the paper along its crease and tucked it into a pocket. Evidence, he presumed, for whatever she meant to bring against Thratia. Whatever she was planning, it was already too late. A shadow passed above them, bigger than any cellium-enriched bee, and all three looked to the sky. Happy Birthday Vera swung into position above them, slicing through the cloud of angry insects. Stingers alit upon Ripka's arms and cheeks and chest, any likely fleshy place. Kalia's face twisted in annoyance, and she reached up to extend her cellium power to Ripka. But Ripka didn't have a lick of cell sense in her entire body. The watch captain swung down from the thick rope ladder and cracked Kalia straight in the head with one of Tibbs's strange overlong wrenches. The bitch went down like a landslide. Deaton would have whooped with joy if the area wasn't then immediately invaded by the bees. They were flooded by the things. Deaton dropped to his knees, saw Ripka slip the ladder, and lost track of Tibbs. Deaton rolled in the dirt, stings blossoming all over like molten metal was raining down upon him. He felt his grip on the cellium cloud slip. He concentrated. Straining against his pain, Deaton yanked the cloud lower, tugging it below the cloud line until anyone who looked up could see the pearlescent globule. He drew it lower, lower, trembling with the strain until the first of the pit's cursed creatures caught a sniff of it. It was irresistible to the little bastards. In a rush, the swarm lifted and delved into the cloud of nectar. Deaton shoved himself up on his elbows and tipped his head back to watch the sky. His cellium cloud was requiring less and less energy to hold as the infestation gobbled it up. He frowned, struggled to his feet, and saw Tibbs do the same. They stared at each other, stupefied with relief. Even Ripka was back on her feet, looking like she'd made love to a cactus, but otherwise whole. Kalia lay unconscious between the three of them, a little trickle of blood seeping down her temple. Deaton's fists clenched. He stepped toward her.
Wait!
Ayella dragged herself to her feet and trudged toward them.
Leave her!
She's a monster!
She thinks you are too!
Ayella set her feet apart, braced herself, and held out a threatening hand.
I said leave her! I still got enough left in me to handle you, Hunding.
Come with us.
No one's going anywhere.
The four stared at the relatively unscathed ex-commodore. Deaton looked beyond her and saw Kalia's dinghy. She'd gotten to it in time. Pits, damn it.
You're done, Hunding.
Thratia collected her discarded blade. Deaton realized he'd sunk to his knees, Tibbs crouching at his side. Didn't know how he'd gotten there, but the sooty ground felt soft. Nice. Better than the cloud pressing in on his head. Ripka and Newchum staggered toward them, and Deaton saw Ripka reach for the knife he'd given her. She was so blasted shaky, Newchum had to lend her an arm, but she came to stand before him, between him and Thratia.
You're outnumbered, Warden. Best hurry back to Aransa before things get violent.
You have no strength left. Lay down your weapon, and I'll consider not stuffing you headfirst in a pipeline.
A balmy shadow passed above, and Deaton tilted his head back, unable to understand what he was seeing. The larkspur slid in under the cloud of ravenous creatures, drawing hard to a stop just between Deaton and Thratia. The ground anchor was flung from its deck. It bit into the soot and ash concoction of the ground, the harpoon at its end spring-released by the pushback so that it gripped the soil and held tight. The next thing to fall from the larkspur was Pelkaya. Deaton stared, dumbfounded, as she soared from the ship's bowsprit, a flat cushion of sail held under her feet completely by Will. She hit the ground, knees flexing, sail dissipating but not vanishing. He could feel it, the feather-thin shawl she worked it into wrapped around herself. Shimmering and distracting, a shifting cloak of night, not nearly beguiling enough to hide the length of steel that appeared in her hand.
Helkiah, no!
Thratio weighed the cutlass in her own hand, eyed this fresh threat, and smiled.
You're no more use to me alive.
Helkiah did not break her stride. Even to Deaton's untrained eye, Thratia had the advantage. She was the superior swordswoman, and Pelkaya was tired, run down, desperate.
Time to go.
Familiar hands grabbed Deaton's armpits and hauled him up on his feet. But he was unable to peel his gaze away from the blurs of cell and steel. What Pelkaya lacked in native talent, she sure as shit made up for in ingenuity. The cell cloud around her she manipulated into sparks of light, threw up tiny walls to cover her feints. He'd never seen anything like it. And he was pretty sure Thratia hadn't either. Otherwise, Pelkaya'd be skewered by now. Thratia parried a hard thrust, twisting so that Pelkaya jerked sideways. The doppel stumbled over ash-slick ground, her side wide open to Thratia's leisure.
Pelkaya!
Thratia's blade swung in and opened the side of Pelkaya's hip. Somehow, Pelkaya got a ball of sail between them, bright as day, and shoved it straight in Thratia's eyes.
Katari, bitch!
Pelkaya whirled. Pelkaya's blade skimmed off boiled leather, bit down and caught in thick padding. Thratia's armor peeled open. Thratia sidestepped and snapped her blade down, batting Pelkaya's wide. Pelkaya stumbled. Fell hard to one side, the blade falling from her grasp. Trembling, she levered herself to an elbow and reached for her weapon. Thratia's boot pressed into the small of Pelkaya's back.
Enough!
Ripka took a halting step toward the fallen doppel. Thratia looked up.
Maybe I will find a use for her alive after all.
Newchum, be a dear and hold our virtuous watch, Captain, will you?
The blessed steward bowed his head and took a half step forward to grab Ripka's arm. It was no great struggle to hold her in place. She was worn through. Deaton caught Aella's eyes, and understanding passed between them. The girl's face was red, her hair hanging limp and sweaty around her child-pudgy cheeks. But she was ready. Aella shifted her stance, palms held up toward the skies. She could keep them clear of the backlash, could deaden even the reach of flaming cell. Aella nodded.
Oh, Thratia! Thratia!
What?
I suggest you cover your eyes.
High above, he blew the cell. A flash so white, its very light burned him and filled the crater. Fire boiled in the cloudless sky, great roiling waves of it. Flaming corpses rained down all around them, chitinous bodies turning to charcoal long before they broke upon the ground. At that moment, he collapsed, Tibbs's grasp doing nothing at all to keep him upright. He lay there for a moment, stunned, drained, watching colors like sunset blossom and blister the sky above.
What the fuck did you do, Haunting?
His anger was gone. He felt light, free.
Get up, damn ye!
Tibbs. Good old Tibbs. Grabbed him by the wrists and yanked him to his feet. He staggered, his leg reminding him it was in worse shape than his back felt.
The others, they're fine.
Tibbs shoved him forward, the bastard. He tried to turn his head, tried to see what had become of Pelkaya, of Thratia. But Tibbs just kept shoving him along, straight toward the flyer's dangling ladder.
Sans damn it, Tibbs, let me see.
Tibbs jerked Deaton around, pointing him straight at the scene of the fight. Pelkaya was still on the ground, but she was pushed to her knees and elbows. Newchum and Ripka closing on her fast. Thratia, where? He couldn't see.
Oh.
The warden lay on the ground a good 10 paces from Pelkaya, curled on her side with one arm flung out. Her chest rose and fell in a variable rhythm, but that didn't stop Deaton's stomach from lurching at the sight of the smoke curls peeling away from her, at the scorched mass of her hair. Pelkaya had found something to do with the cell she held, all right. Thratia's leg twitched, her head turned.
Time to fucking go!
Wait, the girl.
No more waiting!
But...
Go, you idiot!
I thought...
I didn't want you around.
What?
She smiled, brushing gray ash from her blue dress.
Kalia was always going to fail hunting. Her circus is all she's ever cared about. Tunnel vision. She can't see beyond it. And I need her alive, you understand? Alive to stand judgment for her failures. And then, well, I'm the only Velathian bred and trained body positioned to take the reins she's dropped. Her carefully groomed heir. Everyone knows it. I'm her ward. But you, Lord Hunting, could have made things very difficult for me if you'd come around. You and your sour, noble blood.
But you...
I just didn't want the competition.
Newchum staggered over to them, with Pelkaya held upright between himself and Ripka. Without another word, they hurried as best they could toward the ships, while Thratia and Kalia were laid out flat. Happy Birthday Vura and Larkspur were in excellent shape, not even a singe on their gleaming hulls. The bubble of air around them was strangely cool despite the raging inferno of the sky above. He glanced over his shoulder at Aella. She winked. The dinghy had been too damaged to return them to the compound, and so they had taken the ferry, and now wound their slow way through the streets of Aransa. With every step Aella took, fresh agony wormed its way into her arms, her chest, her legs. And yet she smiled. It was tight, controlled. Not enough to give away her joy, but she had to do something to express her triumph. Not that Kalia would have noticed. Aella spared a glance for her mistress. Kalia was carried ahead of her on a shaded palanquin. The curtains snapped tight to hide her from the sun. Well, that's what she'd said. Aella suspected that she just didn't want the people of Aransa to see her in her defeat, in her pain. Which was probably wise. The people had certainly come out to see whatever there was to see. They lined the streets, peered through half-shuttered windows. Each and every one struggled to pick a direction in which to look, either at the strange procession making its way before them or at the fire in the sky. Most looked up. Aella did. The clouds had long since boiled off, and the empty blue vault was smeared in flame. Sourceless, relentless flame. Great swaths of sunset colors roiled out of control, on occasion mingling with the cellium in such a way as to draw out its opalescent streaks of iridescence. Those streaks never lasted long. The fire was ravenous for them. If Aella had known Deaton was capable of such beauty, she might have contrived to keep him. She hoped that Thratia had not seen her moment of weakness. The warden strode before Kalia's palanquin, head straight, jaw set. Though her body was scattered with welts and the skin of her left side was scorched red and raw, she moved with determined calm, her eyes roving over those who gathered to watch her pass. She looked proud, confident, despite her injuries. The doors to Thratia's compound were thrown open for them. All the second and third ranked of Thratia's little militia rushed over to offer assistance. The laborers who Thratia had pressed into carrying Kalia were released and replaced by guards with fresh backs. Apothecs appeared, carrying trays of salves and teas and other accoutrements of their business. Aella started as a stranger tugged gently on her sleeve for attention. The man was rough of face, handsome in his own way, and carried the most disarming smile she'd ever seen. He proffered a wooden tray to her, strange jars splayed over its surface. He pointed to a jar of green soapstone.
This balm will ease the sting, miss.
Thank you.
She snatched it from the tray, and then attempted an encumbered half-bow over a palm laid open to the sweet skies. The man smiled, bobbed his head, and moved along.
Enough of the circus! It is time for the Empire to leave Aransa.
A bruised plum hand nudged a curtain aside, and Kalia leaned her head out.
The Empire will forever be in Aransa, Warden. It is the way of things.
The freshly minted warden pulled herself up to her full height, and Aella felt a thrill buzz through her mind and heart. Whatever was about to happen here was new. After a lifetime of laboring silently in Kalia's lean shadow, anything new was a crisp delight.
Escort dignitary Kalia and her charge to their ship.
Thratia was speaking to her militia, but her eyes did not leave Kalia's. Much to Aella's disappointment, Kalia snapped her curtain shut and ended the confrontation in silence. Change was sometimes too much to hope for. Guards armed with weapons Kalia had helped smuggle into Aransa herded them up the stairs, and Aella allowed herself a slim smile at Kalia's lack of power. Even if the dignitary wanted to protest, she was being carried on the shoulders of Thratia's people. Her autonomy had been revoked. As Aella trudged up the stairs, she smeared the salve from the green jar across her wounds, savoring the cool tingle that radiated from whatever herbs had been smashed into the concoction. She spared a glance for the apothec who had brought it for her, but his balding pate was lost in the press all around. Aella stopped looking the second she stepped onto the dock. Their cruiser was gone. A mid-sized barge hung in the empty space of the U-dock, its overhead buoyancy sacks bulging against the ropes that held them in place. Stabilizing wings hung half open from the front and back, and all of Kalia's attendants were crowded into the center of the ship, held in an uneasy cluster by a line of crossbowmen spread out around the curve of the dock. Of the deviant sensitives, there was no sign. Along the ship's rectangular hull, the Crested Fool was painted in gilded yellow. With utmost care, the guards eased Kalia's palanquin to the ground and pulled away her sheltering curtains. From amongst her cushions, the battered white coat leaned forward.
What is the meaning of this?
You promised me a ship and weapons. Now I have everything we agreed upon.
Kalia jerked herself to her feet.
You lost the ship we sent you, and you have your weapons. Return my craft and my specimens to me immediately.
Now I have a ship. Now I have weapons. Your specimens have already been bathed, fed, and sent to their own private rooms. Under guard, of course. But with time, I do not think I will have need of guards for them. You're free to go, Kalia. Right now. Don't test me again.
Kalia stepped toward the gangplank. Aella started forward, offering her arm to the white coat. Kalia took it.
You, young lady, have a choice. You may stay with me or not. I will not force you either way.
I will go with the woman who raised me.
Kalia lifted her chin with smug satisfaction, which was, of course, precisely the reaction Aella had wanted her to have. When Kalia returned to the Valathian court in disgrace, Aella would be ready. She'd have plenty of time to plan, crossing the sea on such a slow vessel. And if Kalia proved too much a terror on the ship, well then, she had her new little jar of salve tucked safely in the loose folds of her pocket. A great many dangerous herbs could be blended into such a base. Aella touched the jar in her pocket, treasuring it, and felt smooth letters and numbers carved ever so tiny into its base. A cipher. A way to communicate with Thratia in secret if she so chose. Aella did not dare look the warden's way. She was too afraid she would smile. As they crossed the gangplank onto the deck of the new ship, Kalia's attendants started unmooring the ship. The walk had rubbed some of the salve from Aella's arms. She opened the jar, oblivious to the threat of crossbows all around her. Thratia would not fire if there was no need of it.
You've made a grave mistake! Valathia will hear of your betrayal! Good.
Aella fought down a grin, bending her head over the open jar of salve to hide it. Thratia was baiting the Empire to war. She would have to work that into the plans she made as they crossed the sea. The Crested Fool slithered out into the open sky, rising to clear the craft from the line of crossbows. Despite their haste to be away, the ship stayed lower than its preferred cruising height, wary of the fires boiling in the sky above. Heat sharper than any sunlight bathed Aella's head and arms, and in a moment of recklessness she lifted her face to that fire and closed her eyes.
Aella!
It was all she could do to keep from humming a merry tune as she returned to her mistress's side. Deaton sat on the deck of the Larkspur, a cup of tea warming his hands and a large metal fire pit warming his toes. Tibble, Ripka, and Newchum sat around the same fire, their figures slumped in unconsciousness, half-drunk teacups spilled from their hands. Tea Pelkaya had made them. A few stains of the stuff were creeping across the Larkspur's fine wood. That was going to be a pain to clean up. He hitched the thick goat's wool blanket Tibbs had rustled up for him tighter around his waist. It was cold up here, so close to the stars, but the crisp wind felt good on his bare back all the same. Felt like it was leaching some of the heat out of his healing burns. Made his legs feel like numb, dead weight, though. Deaton waited. The tea grew cold by the time Pelkaya emerged from the cabin, stretching herself toward the moonlight. Her face was cast in shadow, but still, he saw her turn, saw her shoulders jump just a little in surprise. She sauntered forward, wearing her preferred face, and knelt beside New Chum.
Had too much to drink, did they?
Something like that.
Deaton leaned forward and set his mug down before him, giving it a twist as if he were drilling it into place. Pelkaya shook her head.
I should have known.
Yes, you should have.
How did you know?
I've been a guest of the White Coats. Golden Needle is what they use to knock off that pesky screaming and squirming that goes on while one's being cut to ribbons.
My apologies. I didn't mean to bring back sour memories.
That's what you're going to apologize for?
It's what I'm actually sorry for. Anything else would be a lie.
At least you're honest.
Pelkaya patted New Chum on the shoulder and walked around the fire to sit beside Deaton, close enough that he could feel the warmth radiating from her, could smell the spicy melange of oil she wore in her hair, a scent that brought with it memories of her smile, obscured by Ripka's face, flashing in the dark. Bright, enticing. Knowing she had him on a string only she could play. He shifted, but didn't scoot away. She stretched her long legs out, letting the soles of her boots draw close to the dancing flames. His own legs were crossed, and beneath the shelter of the blanket, he could feel the wooden handle of his knife shoved in his boot, warm with the heat of his tired body. It would be easy. He didn't like easy.
Which ship?
She said nothing, only reached down and patted the smooth wood of the Larkspur's deck. He nodded.
Why?
I told you all along it was mine.
Not good enough.
All right, then. Callia's given up the chase for now. Gone north to get her sorry hide across the darkling sea before the monsoons strand her behind the sentry gates until the end of the season. Means we've got time. Time I plan on using to sharpen a stick to shove in her eye.
And the Larkspur?
You're a hunted man, Honding.
I've been hunted since I fled Velathia the first time. It's nothing new.
This is different. Back then, they knew your abilities deviated, but not to what extent. And you hadn't yet done them a personal insult. Callia delayed her trip back to Velathia for a week, just on the chance she'd catch you. And I would bet fresh water that she only left when she did, so that she could make it there, drop her cargo, and come right back around before the monsoons really get going. After your little demonstration at the smokestack, you've become worth your weight in sail.
I can't even imagine a man's weight in sail.
Exactly.
What little of the Golden Needle had made it into his system was dragging Deaton down, making him drowsy.
Still haven't told me why you plan on taking my ship.
Do you know what I was planning on doing with it when Tibble found me on the smokestack?
Haven't a clue.
I was debating the merits of shoving it down the throat of a cell pipeline.
Deaton imagined the ramifications. If the line backed up, it could have triggered an eruption.
You wouldn't really have...
Pelkaya tilted her head and looked at him. There was no smile on her lips, no sheen of amusement in her eyes. Just placid, determined calm. The same fierce light she'd had in her eyes when she'd dragged him all the way out to the hub, knowing a White Coat was waiting for her to slip and land in her clutches. Pelkaya was willing to burn the world and herself with it if it meant she'd take down those she'd believed wronged her. He believed she would have shoved it down the pipeline. He really did. Worst of all, he didn't blame her for wanting to. Not one bit.
I can't let you take it. Not for that.
I'm past that. I plan on using this ship against Velathia, but not in such a literal fashion.
Any particular reason you don't want us to be a part of it?
This stretch of time I've been given, this little extension of life, I've been thinking I should do something with it since it was given to me. I believe I'll go find others like us. Maybe even pull them together.
Like us?
You're a good man, Deaton Honding. It's your biggest flaw.
Could be I make you the first step on my downward spiral.
You're not ready for this, Deaton. You scrape across the scorched, ruffling the feathers of those vaguely related to the ones who wronged you, but never really biting deep, never staying in one place too long. With the Flyer, you can do that. You won't raise eyebrows skating into any backwash town on that old thing. I don't know why you won't take up the real fight. Maybe you're afraid you'll get yourself killed. Probably you're afraid you'll get others killed in your name. I've got none of those compunctions. I've paid my blood price. What I want now is war. Maybe you'll come to see me when it's what you want, too.
She stood, and he stood beside her, grabbing her arm.
Got one more question for you, before we part ways.
As you like.
Something's been kicking around the back of my mind these weeks. Your boy, Pelkaya. How old at the end?
If you saw the file...
No good. You think I wouldn't notice an older number scratched off and replaced with 17? I could still feel the dents the ink made in the paper. Funny thing, those little dents. Felt like they wrote out 2 and 7, not 1 and 7. But here you are, face bare to the sky, not looking a day over 30. Not possible. Unless I'm deeply mistaken on certain matters of anatomy.
He was supposed to last.
How many? How many sons and daughters have you outlived?
With a subtle twist of her shoulder, she freed her arm from his grasp and turned, stepping up close enough that the scent of the oil she used to tame her hair nearly overwhelmed his senses.
Enough.
That's fair. Stay out of their hands, Pelkaya, whatever you do. You've no idea what they'll do to carve the secret of your longevity out of you.
Deaton settled back down on the deck and stretched his legs out. The tea was cold and bitter, but he got it down in one gulp. Deaton tipped his head up to watch the stars pass above. Up this close, they were as bright as a lamp in the dark and as large as his own two hands laced together. Even at night, he could see little sparks of sail catching and snuffing out high above the cloud line. What he'd started in Aransa was having a hard time finishing. He shivered under their knowing glare and pulled the blanket tighter around his shoulders.
What are you doing, Honding? Aren't you going to help me prep the Flyer?
No, Pelkaya. You want my ship? You're going to have to do the work and carry my sorry hide off it.
The Scorched Continent, Steal the Sky is a Graphic Audio production. Copyright 2016, Megan E. O'Keefe. All rights reserved. Recorded with the permission of the author. Production copyright 2017, The Cutting Corporation. All rights reserved. Unauthorized download and/or duplication is prohibited. Performed by Terence Aselford as narrator, Chris Gennebach as Deaton Honding, Alyssa Wilmoth as Ripka Leshy, David Jordan as Tibbs, Dawn Ursula as Thratia Ganal, Nora Ashrati and Lily Beacon as Pelkaya, and Colleen Delaney as Kalia, with Christopher Walker, Kimberly Gilbert, Terence Aselford, Sasha Olinick, Nanette Savard, Yasmin Toison, Scott McCormick, Bradley Smith, Jacob Yeh, Lynette Rothnam, Chris Stinson, Ken Jackson, Richard Rowan, Michael John Casey, Carolyn Kashner, Rose Elizabeth Supan, Mort Shelby, and Dylan Lynch. Directed by Terence Aselford. Produced by Rick Rowan, Dwayne Beeman, and Matt Webb. Executive producers James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornett. Book adapted for graphic audio by Doug Krenslin. Dialogue editing and graphic audio sound design by McCubbin Owens. If you enjoyed The Scorched Continent, Steal the Sky, be sure to listen to John Sprunk's series, The Book of the Black Earth, and Brandon Sanderson's Mistborn series. Available at Road Stops Everywhere at 1-800-670-5220 or at www.graphicaudio.net, where you'll find samples of all our Action Pump titles, as well as free downloads and podcasts. Keep listening for a preview of other thrilling titles in graphic audio.
Thanks for listening to this Graphic Audio production. Graphic Audio has over 1,000 titles and 100 series to choose from in high-quality download formats. If you'd like to listen to an entire series, you can now conveniently purchase a download series set from graphicaudio.net. At graphicaudio.net, you can also earn loyalty rewards points, redeemable towards future online purchases. You can stream or get full downloads directly to your mobile phone or tablet with our newly updated Graphic Audio Access app, available on all Android and Apple devices. Listen to a movie in your mind, on the go, anytime, anywhere. And be sure to listen to our new free Graphic Audio Story Podcast, GASP, featuring all new serialized episodes of a complete full-length story, along with episodes that feature short stories in our graphic audio format. Once you do, we're confident you'll want to subscribe, give us a 5-star review, and recommend us to your friends and family. You can subscribe to GASP through Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, TuneIn, and RSS feeds. Coming this fall, look for Graphic Audio Streams, our new streaming subscription service. Sign up for our email newsletter for the latest updates and new releases, like us on Facebook, or follow us on Twitter or Instagram. Call 1-800-670-5220 or visit www.graphicaudio.net.